It's the 5th annual awards floptacular.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
And I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot, which one? Elliot Kalin.
Oh, okay.
Not Elliot Gould, unfortunately.
Good one. Classic Elliot joke.
Classic Elliot, yep.
It's that time of year again, the time for everyone's least favorite episode of the Flophouse.
Yeah. Our annual regrets and shame episode.
What?
Stuart, what are you most regretful about this year?
I regret putting that mogul in the ski slope. That busted Dan's knee.
Wait, what?
You weren't supposed to say that, and also that was going to be mine. Now I've got nothing to talk about.
What a weird twist ending that would be. I put a mogul on your ski slope to steal your podcast away.
Yep. But then I realized it was too much work, so I just let you keep doing it.
The original script for The Lady Killers, I think.
Right? Yeah, it was originally called The Leg Stealers.
Wait, I was trying to steal his leg by fucking it up with a mogul?
When you get his leg, you get his power.
I don't want to draw the curtain back too much, but this is the first episode after my knee surgery. Also, Stuart has had a stressful day, so buckle in for some laughs.
And I'm just tired.
Elliot stayed up too late last night watching the Academy Awards.
Watching
the 74,000th
annual Academy Awards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They predate history. In fact, it's now believed that the Venus of Willendorf was actually an early Oscar. It was awarded to Best Cave Painting, the Lascaux Caves. Nowhere near Willendorf. So, you know, I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, which brings us to the point to today's episode.
We don't have a movie
whenever
for this
you're
episode.
Listening to it. So, will be the awards floptacular.
They could probably look at the pod player.
Who's that over on the red carpet? Why, it's Stuart Wellington.
Who are you wearing, Stuart?
Whose
skin are you wearing?
Well, I'm wearing Stuart's skin, duh. I'm wearing jeans by Levi.
Oh,
and
Claude Levi-Strauss.
By some t-shirt company I don't want to look at the tag for.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. And look over here. It's Dan McCoy hobbling down the red carpet.
Yep.
Dan, whose crutches are you wearing this evening?
They were issued to me by the hospital for special surgery. It's everyone's favorite, the corrector, Elliot Kalin.
Oh, stop. Yes, I'm here.
Wearing what appears to be a striped polo shirt.
Yep, it's a striped polo shirt from Stripes of Beverly Hills. And I'm wearing, this is a true story, the jeans Boris Karloff was buried in.
All right, well, hopefully that got you in the awards mood.
It's the Floptacular Awards! The 75th annual Floptacular Awards of the Flophouse is brought to you by Rolled Gold Pretzels. The rolledest and the goldest. If it's not gold, it might be rolled gold.
We haven't even gotten to that sheet
and
of paper
Dove
of
soap.
Jokes you wrote down.
Soap made out of birds.
You want to smell like a dead bird?
Get Dove soap and Pert Plus. It's like Pert with something extra added to it. What is the plus? Shh, that's our surprise.
It's dandruff creator.
It's a vicious cycle.
All those sponsors and more, bringing you to the Flop Awards, the Floptaculars, also known as the Floppies, also known as the Oscar followers.
I was here in say the glamorous Dan's apartment theater.
We don't do enough characters normally, so I'm glad we're doing we're doing funny bits.
Hey, why? Who's that on the red carpet at the Floptacular? It looks like film star Daniel Craig.
Hello.
And who's this coming up to him? It's film star Clive Owen.
Hello.
And it's singing songbird Adele. Hold on. That's what Adele sounds like.
No, that was the house cat pushing Adele out of the way. He doesn't play by rules except for his own.
That's true. The house cat had to get to, he is chaotic neutral. He had to get to his seat.
Okay, Adele. That's a singer. Mm-hmm. It I is. Saw her sing a song last night.
She did sing a song.
You correctly identified her as a singer.
She won an Oscar. So what? So Dan, what do we do on the Floptacular Awards? Aside from pretend celebrities are here. Well, look, it's Michael Caine, everybody.
It's me, Michael Caine. I have appeared in one movie this year, The Dark Knight Rises, which is about a knight who is both dark and rises.
And look over there, that's James Caine. I'm sorry, James Caan. James Caan is the name. I'm so sorry. Don't go. No, don't go, sir. Oh, well, good thing none of us can do a James Caan impression. He got mad and left.
Traditionally.
That hasn't stopped everyone else we can't do impressions of.
Good point, good
leaving.
Point.
They just keep showing up.
Well, look over there, it's pasta star Chef Boyardee. Well, I can't wait for this year's Floptacular Awards. Now, you're not in the film business. No, but I've fed my fair share of the movie stars. Thank you very much, Chef. My best to Mrs. Boyardee. So what do we do with these things, Dan?
Traditionally, let me refresh your mind.
You got through a whole sentence that time, Elliot. It was because you were drinking water.
I was drinking water, yeah. Luckily, you were there to jump in and pick up the slack before you got through half a paragraph.
Regular listeners will perhaps remember that we discussed the Academy Awards program, which we all watched.
Yesterday.
And paid varying degrees of attention
to. It's about
movies,
right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the highest honor in the movie business other than making a hit movie that makes a lot of money.
Having a successful career, yeah.
Yeah. And then later on, who knows, we might give out a few of our own awards and talk about films that we liked this last year.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can think of three that Stuart liked.
Mm-hmm. Released this last year.
Well, I mean, they're the same three he likes every year.
Okay.
So, Dan, what should we start with? You're the host. Let's host it up. The host of the, and now, the host of this year's Floptacular Awards, Dank McCoy.
Hey, everyone, it's me, Dan so McCoy.
Is this a bit?
Yeah, you were trapped on the couch with your leg injury.
Yeah.
How did that affect your Oscar viewing experience?
I was more tired and hazy than normal, and I cared less. So I may not have as much to contribute, actually, as in years past.
Well, I watched it in a noisy bar.
Yeah,
so
me too.
I think I had a similar experience.
I've discovered the secret to enjoying the Oscars.
Yeah.
Which is, don't worry about tweeting or reading Twitter while you're watching the Oscars. Yeah, I enjoyed it so much more, not feeling like I had to catch up on the jokes or send my own joke-em-ups out.
Yeah, that's a secret I wish I had learned. I had always previously actually enjoyed just watching the Oscars. And then all of a sudden, sometime in the last couple of years, comedy people have become contractually obligated to tweet about award shows.
Tweet about everything.
So I felt prey to that urge, and I was tweeting about it. I continued to tweet about it until such time as it came time to ice my leg. And then I disappeared from Twitter mysteriously for 30 minutes.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was icing his leg for 30 minutes.
Was returning to Twitter after 30 minutes.
Because I have to say, watching Shirley, it was like, this was my experience last night. Oh, this is a funny opening bit. Okay, it's going on a little too long. Now I'm tired of it. But hey, now some awards, whatever. I'm having genuine reactions to them. Shirley Bassey, oh, this is great. I love this song. Oh, that's sad. That's right. I forgot Ralph McQuarrie died. Now I can mourn him positively. Oh, hey, look at this. Some more awards. I didn't feel the need to snark it up about everything. I still did about some things. I thought the fact that they had a tribute to the great musicals of the last 10 years, which is roughly four.
Yeah, it was three musicals.
There's three musicals, and they didn't put in Hairspray, I guess. And that was about it. I thought that was
or Repo the Genetic Opera.
That would have been so great if they threw in the reunion
Stewart
of the
Head or whatever.
Repo the Genetic Opera. Paris Hilton just shows up.
Yeah,
perfect.
You know, I guess these things traditionally start with the discussion of the host.
How did you guys feel about the host, the movie? The Korean movie.
It was great.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's amazing.
Love it. It's a good movie.
It could use more CGI monster, though. And fire.
It could be CGI fire.
More of that.
It could use more abrupt tonal shifts. I don't feel like it had enough of those.
Yeah, I felt like he'd handled those better in some of his other movies. But anyway, so the host. Who was the host? Todd McFarlane? Creator of Spawn?
Do you know Fia? That's my entire when I finally of my Todd McFarlane
when
impression.
I finally saw Todd McFarlane when like the, he was doing those animated Spawn intros.
Yeah.
Like I was like, oh, this makes sense. I get this guy now. I get why all of his things
are
have,
the
like,
way
this,
they
like,
are.
Hyper need to be cool because it oozes out of his greasy
pores.
Because
he's pores. So oh, greasy cool.
Greasy. That's a bit much.
He is.
I think what you mean to say is Canadian.
Okay.
Not as greasy as old Grease Witherspoon, who looked great last night.
Grease. I like to think Grease Witherspoon is literally a hobo who lives in a rail yard and dreams of owning a diner. Somebody's never going to achieve that dream. Or like, oh, that's just old Grease Witherspoon. Got any grease for me?
Grease Witherspoon sounds to me like, you know, one of those porn stars who thinks that they need to name themselves after a famous actress, but doesn't really understand the concept of what's sexy.
Like Charlie Chase, the porn star named after a silent film comedian?
Yeah.
So the
Academy Awards, huh?
So the host was Seth MacFarlane, creator of the Family Guy family of shows. And I thought for the most part he did a fine job. It was a little too much singing, and he was a little smirky, but it's a thankless job. I felt like he had some funny jokes, and he left the stage for long periods of time when he needed to.
Yeah.
But there was just too much musical singing.
It seemed like a weird move for a guy that I have this impression, like, wants to be, like, thought of as this edgy guy to some degree, that, like, all I thought last night kind of was like, oh, you know, this is, in a couple of years, he could be a passable Ryan Seacrest.
I think there seem to be two competing sides to him. There's the Family Guy, Ted, American Dad side.
Yeah.
And then there's the side that does concerts
that wants to be a song and
of
dance man.
Broadway musicals. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like the classically trained, like, Hollywood type. Like classic Hollywood type guy, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it seems like the move for him right now is to try to become a bigger star.
Yeah,
which this is a platform for.
I mean, I thought he was fine. I did think that he seemed to not have like as someone who has no background per se in like stand up or something like that. He seemed to have trouble sometimes dealing with like if things weren't going.
Yeah,
great.
He wasn't
like, he
great at rolling with the punches.
Yeah, and there were times when he was just like, ha, live television, folks, that's why you do it. Like,
you're saying
like
he lives in this insulated bubble of yes men who are laughing at all of his jokes and wearing backwards baseball caps and Tiva sandals.
I don't really know that that's what he said at all.
No, it just seemed like he got a little sweaty maybe sometimes when things didn't go over. But all in all, he was a funny guy.
He was all right. Yeah, just the bits were too long. I mean, this is... Obviously, it's the same thing you could say about a lot of Family Guy bits. Is the bit that whole opening bit with William Shatner with like the reviews from the future?
Yeah.
It was like it went on for what 15 minutes, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that was crazy. That was
like,
insanely
taken,
long.
Like, four poops during that time.
And the fact that they had two songs during that, three if you count the boobs song. Like
sure,
it was really
that went over like gangbusters.
But like even the
on
boobs,
the internet,
the boobs song is like a funny gag. But then they did like a whole song of it. Like it should have been like a verse, you know. There was a lot of people singing whole songs during the Oscars when they could have gotten by with a verse and a chorus.
Although there's part
like
of
a medley.
Me.
Exactly. Well, like the fact that they sang the whole All That Jazz song, then the whole I'm Not Going song, and then the whole, you know, I assume that's the whole You're My Friend, whatever song from Ted that they sang later in the show.
Right.
And they did a Les Mis medley, like it was just like, why are we singing all these songs? Why are we singing the whole song? When Shirley Bassey sang Goldfinger, I kind of didn't expect her to do the entire song, you know?
Yeah, but that was the one great moment of the whole thing.
That was like Kirk Douglas coming out.
Like, yeah, no, I agree.
Like seeing something you don't normally see.
Yeah, but and that's what I liked about it. And what I love about the Oscars when they do it right is they have those things you don't normally see, whether it's stars you don't see together or stars doing things you don't normally see or real stars from the classic past coming back that you don't see very much. But for every one of those moments, there was three where it was like, and now the whole cast of the movie Chicago. Great. I don't give a shit.
Who seemed to have totally had some sort of them. Falling out at some point.
The movie that they didn't. It's not like they were excited to be around each other. No one cares about the movie Chicago. It won Best Picture and most people don't remember that.
Yeah.
Sure. I just remember that it stole a Best Picture from one of the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah. Last year they could have done. It was the 40th anniversary of The Godfather, I think, right? Last year? because it came out in 72, I think. They could, if they had gotten like a cast reunion of The Godfather, like Al Pacino and Robert Duvall and Diane Keaton and James Caan and some of the others.
Marlon Brando.
Not Marlon Brando, probably. Like, that would have been amazing because that's a group of people that, like, you genuinely don't see together, and it's a movie that is so established as one of the great movies. But, like, to get together the cast of Chicago, like, oh, there's Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere up on stage again with Queen Latifah, like, together again, finally, the class of 84.
So we got to enjoy
the original Breakfast Club.
We got the John Hughes tribute when they had a lot of the people from his movies. Like, that was a special thing.
Yeah.
You got to see that they all aged really weirdly.
No, I got to witness the moment where Renee Zellweger's squinting shaded over into eye problems.
And it's like, to get the Chicago reunion is less exciting to me than if they'd gotten like a Short Circuit 2 reunion. Oh, it was like Fisher Stevens and Mike McKeon and Johnny Five.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been exciting to me. And now, wouldn't the cast of Short Circuit 2.
Elliot, Johnny Five died.
What? No!
Didn't you were paying attention to the In Memoriam section?
He was in the In Memoriam? Oh, if I was an Oscar producer, I wouldn't do it because I have too much respect for those people, but I'd love to stick a fictional character into that In Memoriam. Just put Gizmo in there.
And died in the bath. How ironic.
How ironic. This place where he gives life.
I as someone who grew up, though, back in the time when, like,
Oscar, when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Yeah.
Take that guy who's 2 years older than me.
When the Oscars were a lot more about pageantry, I kind of enjoyed, like, seeing an old-style Oscars where it's just like, we're going to throw a bunch of fucking musical numbers at you for no reason.
Well, I liked...
Because the pendulum had swung too far in the opposite direction, where it was just like, this is going to be efficient, we're going to have an efficient Oscars, no one's going to get to talk, we're going to be out of here by 11.
I did like that it was an Oscars that seemed to understand, like the fact of the Oscars is not to get people, if anything, even excited about movies. Like, the fact of the Oscars is to, like, have this big bullshit ceremony that goes on forever and does a lot of crazy stuff that you can't see anywhere else, you know? And they did, like, they didn't have the, like, interpretive dancing to the scores stuff. Like, there were a few choices they made that were much more efficient. But then they didn't make up for that by – a lot of the things they added weren't added value. It was a long comedy bit or
right.
– and, like – I felt like one of the better comedy bits was the Von Trapp family introduction to Christopher Plummer, and it went by very quickly. Like, it was long for an introduction, but it was a quick bit, and it was about a movie. People recognized it. There you go. Done. You're out, you know. But instead, all those musical numbers, I don't know. Like, having Barbra Streisand there was something that I don't really care about, but I could tell was like a special moment. Singing that song in tribute to Marvin Hamlisch, like, that's a special moment, even if I'm not a huge fan of hers. But some of the other stuff, it was just like, I was like, who is enjoying this? Like, the Barbra Streisand thing, I could tell who was enjoying it.
Yeah.
Shirley Bassey, I was enjoying it. But some of the other things.
Yeah, for a lot of the other stuff, the aforementioned Chicago, all that
and the
jazz.
The Dreamgirls thing. Well, it's just because, like, the Dreamgirls thing, it's like, we saw this, like, a couple years ago. It was like when Christoph Waltz won for Best Supporting Actor. I love him a lot. But it was like, we saw this 2 years ago.
Yeah, stop doing a repeat, idiot.
The same basic character.
That's something to talk about. I feel like there.
Let's move to the awards.
Lost points in your Oscar pool on that one, didn't you?
I lost points on. I mean, I didn't win my Oscar pool at all.
I did very poorly. A few upsets. That's what I want to talk
about. Yeah, like, I was upset when they did the whole song from Dreamgirls. Anyway, but let's talk about the awards.
No, but I mean, like, I don't think anyone really expected Christoph Waltz to win. I mean, like, there was some talk about it, but I, you know, like, that was kind of a surprise.
I mean, I like him, but I was disappointed that I wanted Robert De Niro to win, and I didn't think he was going to win, but I wanted him to win. So
yeah, I think
yeah, I'm with you.
A lot of, I think it was weighted towards Tommy Lee Jones, but then there were people who were saying, "Oh, maybe De Niro because it's been forever, and this is a great."
And he was really great, and it felt like it would be that kick in the pants to him to be like, "You should be doing more of these.
Yeah,
you should be doing less like bullshit comedy and horror movies that pay you a lot of money, but you don't do anything in
that." But that was a surprise, like. Quentin Tarantino, I think, winning was a surprise. The Ang Lee winning was a big surprise.
It was a surprise to me. I mean, I haven't seen that movie yet still because it looks so incredibly boring. But yeah. That was a surprise. There were the
what, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Yeah, that's what he won for. Well, they gave him the award in theory for Life of Pi, but I know it's just an apology award for Hulk. That's the award he was supposed to get for Hulk, but he wasn't nominated.
Yeah.
Like,
for Ride with the Devil.
I was happy that Jennifer Lawrence won. That's one that I was hoping for and was worried she was going to get shut out, because I thought that was a really good performance. And she clearly didn't expect to win. And one of my favorite moments of the night was when they played the clips for Best Actress, and they showed Jennifer Lawrence's clip where she's nuts in that diner, and she does that great laugh that is a crazy person pretending to be crazier than she is to make a point and revealing how crazy she is. And it cut back to Jennifer Lawrence, and she had this look at her face like, who the hell was that? Who was that crazy person? Who let her in? But what awards were you guys happy to see the winners for? Aside from, obviously, you guys are big ARG heads. So
I mean, I was happy that Tarantino won. I mean, like, it's an overlong, lumpy screenplay, but it's a very original screenplay compared to...
It is the most original screenplay of the ones that were nominated.
All the other ones were cobbled together with, like, newspaper clippings.
Yeah.
This one was handwritten.
I mean, it's not like he needs the validation.
In his own alphabet.
He's already, at this point, he's already established as... I was disappointed.
Well, he doesn't need the personal validation. Yeah. His head is big enough. We do not need to...
I was hoping that that Moonrise Kingdom would win for that, but yeah. I knew they wouldn't, so...
Understandably so, because it's a Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, we will never win. I had a conversation with former Flophouse guest host Brock Mahan once, where we were like... Well, I guess we'll just have to be comforted in the fact that when we're old people, we can give Wes Anderson a Lifetime Achievement Oscar, because he's never going to win one.
I mean, I like seeing Jennifer Lawrence win. I didn't have a lot emotionally invested, I feel like, in any of the...
Obviously, there was one bittersweet award win for me.
Sure.
When
the guy who looks like Edgar Winner went up and accepted his award.
Which guy that looked like Edgar Winner? There were like 10 guys with super long blonde hair and various shades of pale.
Yeah, all the sound editors and various technical awards all seemed to go to sorcerers this year.
Speaking of people looking like people, I felt like...
I did like that. Stuart was amazed at how many wizards were winning Academy Awards.
I felt like Nicholson looked like Emmett Kelly or something in his oversized
suit. With his makeup off.
Yeah.
But when Milburn, New Jersey won an Academy Award, that was pretty exciting.
And it wasn't you.
And it wasn't me. Oh, yeah. Don't rub it in. Well, she's not the first person from Milburn to win an Academy Award.
Really?
There's a guy who is he's either an editor or sound editor. I think he's an editor who's worked with Ang Lee a lot, who lives in town.
You ever just go hang
great
out?
Great story.
Other Milburn natives, Belva Plain.
Okay.
There's an admiral.
All right.
Anyway, but there was a lot of talk on Twitter and on Facebook about me being either sad or excited that my ex-girlfriend won.
Sure.
And I just want to reestablish and reiterate, not my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, so did you
not
rub
someone
it in
I
your,
know well?
Did she rub it in your nose when she won it?
No, in fact, we had no contact whatsoever.
It's been years. There's no need to be a gentleman about this. You can kiss and tell.
No, there's no kissing to tell about.
The look Dan just gave you sent a chill up my spine.
And straight to your penis.
I suppose it was the look of a man who once asked about someone's wife's ass.
On this very podcast. We all remember that. I mean, not this episode. Overall, I was happy that the Academy Awards, that no movie dominated. There was no sweep. There was a lot of sprinklings of awards.
I mean, Life
and
Pi won a lot of awards.
It won a fair amount of technical awards, but the acting awards were spread out among a bunch of movies.
I feel like Lincoln and Zero Dark Thirty were kind of underrepresented compared to previous awards ceremonies this year.
A little bit, yes, but the last couple of awards ceremonies were very heavy towards Argo.
Yeah.
And not towards too much else. So I was worried that Argo was just going to... I mean, but Argo wasn't nominated for any acting awards. It didn't win Best Director.
I thought Alan Arkin
Oh, that's right. It was nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I forget about that. He wasn't going to win that, though. Again, because he just won Best Supporting Actor for playing a similar role not too long ago. But then And people never win for that unless they're Christoph Waltz.
I think everybody was just really liked his Saturday Night Live performance.
And but then why did they give Jennifer Lawrence an Academy Award when she was on a terrible episode of Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, she was terrible.
I mean, she did the best she could with the material of Top Dog Chef and so forth. But
it had Danielle, that great parody of 70s softcore Europe one.
I liked that a lot, and there was another sketch that I liked that I don't remember now.
Top Dog Chef, you just said it.
No, it wasn't Top Dog Chef.
I feel like we should move on soon, actually, because there's not a lot more to say about it. But was there any awful things this year that you...
What, choices? Or
just moments in the ceremony?
I think we went... I mean, a lot of the music.
The...
I mean, I didn't like it when Jennifer Lawrence fell on the stairs, but, you know...
That adds adorable. That adds an immediacy, like a realism.
That's
to
true.
The,
it does add
that makes her seem attainable, Elliot.
She's not Dan.
She's a clumsy girl.
She's not a. Yeah, I forgot that was your fetish, clumsy girls.
Yeah, that's why you always watch Good Luck Chuck all the time.
He goes to that porn site clumsygirls.com, where it's just girls falling down in their clothes. I guess sometimes ripping.
Yeah. Most of the time,
falling down and landing on top of naked men.
The odds against that are so huge, but. I'm trying to think what moments made me like wince, and I'm having trouble.
There was some bad banter.
There was some dumb banter, but there always is.
That was like probably like the one of my better tweets of the night was like you could play the new Oscar game, which was a bit or teleprompter malfunction, because like there were all these things like it seemed like maybe they were improvising and that was the plan, but maybe like something just went wrong.
A tweet that you have to explain. Hilarious.
I didn't...
I mean, to people watching the show...
I didn't word it as clumsily when I tweeted it.
He was channeling his favorite porn site, clumsygirl.com, just then, in his tweet phrasing.
You know, they got all those bruises on them, and I went into a bad place.
Wow. Pervazoid.
I'm falling.
Wow. Yeah, no, I know that's what the bruises are from. You entered a totally new level of pervazoid that I'm not comfortable even acknowledging.
I mean, on the subject of pervazoids, I have seen some feedback on how this Academy Awards was kind of misogynist or hateful towards women.
How so? It was super cleavy.
Well... Things like the I Saw Your Boob song, there are a couple of Seth MacFarlane's jokes, maybe.
Yeah, he goes to the gutter.
There's a lot, there's like a fair amount of people being like, oh, you know, like I saw much more positive response to the I Saw Your Boobs song than I thought I was going to, and that,
Brazzers forums.
Like, I'm usually not... I usually am more apt to get annoyed at people who take offense at a joke than at a joke itself. But that joke actually did irritate me because it was just like, well, there are all these women here who are being honored for their talent and, you know, like their abilities as actresses.
They pulled themselves up by their bootstraps.
Except
and
nothing.
Now you are reducing them to nothing more than sets of boobs.
Except the larger joke of that is that this is a stupid thing that he did. That's why I think that should have been a
bit. Yeah, but I don't feel like putting in that context excuses it necessarily.
But. I think if it was a shorter bit, it could have worked. But I don't think it even worked. I don't even think it was terrible. But it was weird for that setting.
Yeah.
But hey, sometimes to make up for that, you need... several musical numbers from movies that people don't remember winning Academy Awards.
Get a CGI character to come up and present an award.
Yeah, I'm never a fan of that. Never a fan of that.
So,
although I did like hearing the Ted voice announce the nominee, Ago.
So, perhaps we should move along to handing out our own awards.
Our own awards, the floppies. Well, we're back to the Floptacular Flop Academy Awards. First up... Dan McCoy, rated R, is playing at right now.
So I'd like to give out the first award of the evening. Best Supporting Actor, or my Best Supporting Actor, goes to Luis Guzman in Journey to the Mysterious Island.
I heartily endorse that, yeah.
For sneaking a celluloid closet-style coded homosexual love affair between himself and The Rock into a kid's movie. With the help of only a few 3D berries.
Yeah, that coincided with my best excuse to stare at The Rock's pecs. To Journey 2.
Well, I actually... Should I continue with Journey 2 or should I...
Sure. Well,
just
why
get
not?
Some?
Journey well, 2 sweep.
Just for me, personally...
Do what your body wants.
Best Picture was a tie between Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, and The Last Godfather.
Every day...
I was considering giving out that award, and those were the two I was going to pick.
They were, but it goes without saying. Journey 2 was delightful, and The Last Godfather was insane.
looking back over the years' podcasts, I am crushed to see that I did not get to watch that movie with you guys.
Yeah, well, I own the DVD still, so you can watch it.
No, you don't have the Blu-ray?
No, I don't have it on Blu-ray. Owl didn't get me the Blu-ray copy. I would like to give out the award for least amount of movie in a movie this year, and it goes to The Devil Inside, where barely anything happened, and the movie didn't even have an ending. You had to go to the internet to find it.
Yeah. On a similar note, I would like to give the Stuart face down on the floor watching Oogie Loves Award for a movie that almost broke me, and that, too, goes to The Devil Inside, the film I had to purchase twice for $14.99 each time, even though its approximate retail value is 39 cents.
That's you rounding up.
My next one, it was a three-way tie for, I think, the best Nicolas Cage performance in a movie we watched this year, which went to Seeking Justice, The Raven, and Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
It's interesting because I actually gave the Nicolas Cage Award for Best Actor to Nicolas Cage for everything.
Weird. Because I gave the coveted Cagiest Cage Award for the Nick Cage's performance of the year to John Cusack for The Paperboy.
That's interesting. I would have done the same, giving him the Cagiest Cage, but I actually gave him the Less Than Zero Award for two performances that totally cancel each other out for The Raven and The Paperboy. I felt The Paperboy was so amazing and The Raven was so bland. Cancel each other out as if John Cusack had never existed.
The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind Award for a movie I totally forgot we watched this last year goes to Immortals.
Oh, I gave Immortals. That to One for the Money.
One for the Money was actually a contender for the movie I enjoyed the most.
Really? Wow.
Well, it was inoffensive and it had some jokes.
I gave it the Movie I Most Forgot We Watched Award. Here, the Sucker Punch Award for making crazy ideas totally boring goes to The Paperboy. Runner-up, Total Recall.
This is actually my final award of the night.
Oh, I've got quite a few more.
That's fine. But my final award it's the Least Serious Treatment of a Terrible Disease Award. A tie this year between A Little Bit of Heaven's cute and sassy treatment of ass cancer and, of course, The Last Godfather, a wacky comedy that's clearly about a mentally disabled middle-aged Korean man.
Stuart, what else have you got?
I don't have much more other than, did you guys remember we watched The Three Musketeers this year?
That was this year?
Yeah, that was this year.
So that was worst performance for Christoph Waltz, I guess, this year.
I thought it was best performance for Orlando Bloom.
Lando Bloom?
Lando Bloom.
Bloom. That's when he dresses up as Billy Dee Williams. He's just Lando Bloom.
He won the movie in a game of cards.
I'm going to give the award for most nonsensical use of leaves. Uh-oh. Well, we're just coming in right now. The winner, a thousand words for the leaves equals words in a mystical man-tree soul bond. Now, I know what you're thinking. The Odd Life of Timothy Green should have won. It had two nominations. Growing Leaves from an Ankle and Making a Pencil Out of Leaves. I guess that they split the vote. And so The Odd Life of Timothy Green loses the Most Nonsensical Use of Leaves award.
It was close. It was a close call.
Sad.
But
sad
hey, what's one. This? You're not going home empty-handed, The Odd Life of Timothy Green, because here's the best Ayn Rand adaptation we watched this year, The Odd Life of Timothy Green. The story of an iconoclastic innovation in the private market that saves the town without government interference. And also, they don't get free health care, so Timothy Green dies.
Oh.
That's what happened?
Well, something like that.
I thought he Pete's Dragon to another town.
He didn't Pete's Dragon, no.
Pete's Dragon away.
Now here's, this is usually a very, very hard-fought category each year, very contentious. Best use of a lemon in seducing a woman who it turns out isn't really interested in you, but is just setting you up for a trap set by a vengeful circus ringmaster. And it goes to Passion Play.
Oh, God.
You forgot about that. Didn't you? Forgot about it. Moving on, least amount of abducting in a film goes to Abduction, in which the main character, it turns out, was never abducted, but was being hid by secret agents pretending to be his parents.
Do you think they named it Abduction to draw people in with the promise of an abduction in the movie?
I think they were looking for something that emphasized abs.
Okay.
There was also the best use of time bricks. It goes to the movie In Time. In Time also wins most confusing use of Olivia Wilde. And, of course, best perching of old people on a ship's mast goes to Battleship for its scene of old people just hanging out, perching on a ship's mast. What are they doing there? We don't know. There's the Special Minority Report Award for setting up a penalty that never actually happens. goes to 1,000 words for telling us Eddie Murphy will die when he runs out of words, but instead he's fine. the twist ending. The exact opposite happens. He is not dead. And I think this will be my final award for the night. Best movie Stuart totally wishes he had seen, Trespass. Runner-up, Last Godfather.
Thanks for throwing in the addendum there.
Yeah.
So just a little talk I feel like is good at this point about movies that we enjoyed this past year.
Do we enjoy
just
movies?
Talked about them. What the fuck?
You know, we don't have a proper year in review episode. This is the closest we come to it.
Yeah,
so,
2 months into the next year.
Mm-hmm. Once everyone will have forgotten everything that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I had to go back to my list of movies I saw this year.
I just like to say...
Yeah, that's an actual list you make every year.
Every year I keep a list of the movies I watched that year. Yeah. I'm up to... This is kind of crazy, but I think I'm on my 43rd or 44th movie so far this year.
Mm,
not yet the end of
crazy.
February. It's nuts. I tell my wife that out of pride, and she says, we need to spend more time together.
Do you put the Flophouse movies in italics or something?
No, I just list them. Look, I'm not ashamed. Sometimes I'm ashamed. When writing out the Oogie Loves in the Big Balloon Adventure was a test. I'll admit was a test of my personal honesty.
And you're like, why does Microsoft Word keep telling me this is wrong?
The paperclip comes out and says, excuse me, are you sure you want to admit that? It looks like you're making a mistake. Sorry, Dan, you were saying.
It looks like you're writing a confession. When talking about movies that we liked this past year, I'm sure we all went about it in different ways. I didn't want to necessarily focus on the best movies of the year because it's all the usual suspects. Like
the usual suspects came out like 20 years ago.
Yeah,
many of which actually
and
did
it's all
get
bullshit,
nominated
it didn't,
for.
It doesn't, well, he just made it all
verbal.
Up.
Was just making up the story.
Yeah, he's making it all up. Why should I give a shit?
I thought he just. Oh.
That's why he showed all that stuff in Chaz Palminteri's office.
I thought Chaz Palminteri just didn't like his coffee.
And smashed it on the floor.
No, I just want to say that like my favorite movie of the year, in my opinion, the best movie of the year was The Master. But I'm not going to go sort of further in that direction. I'm just going to talk about...
The Beach Girls?
I'm just going to list a few movies that I thought were... either underseen in that they were not huge box office hits, or they're underrated in that maybe they didn't get a lot of critical praise, often because they are more genre-y films that don't get that kind of critical praise. So,
So this is stuff to watch on an airplane.
Yeah, no, these are enjoyable movies.
1.5 thumbs up movies.
No, these are movies that I really like.
A zombie
this last
bite
year.
Off the other half of yeah. the thumb.
They may be a little sillier, but I really enjoyed them.
Okay.
I'm not going to judge you, dude. Just say it.
Yeah, Haywire, the Steven Soderbergh mixed
martial
arts.
Was this year? Yeah,
very fun
good.
Movie.
Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, of course.
Loved it.
Lockout, a.k.a. Space Jail.
Oh, man.
That was a lot of fun. Actually,
for Best Picture.
That
Lockout.
If you were allowed to give a Best Picture to kind of like a fun, by-the-numbers genre movie that managed to heighten just through like charm, then that's the one I would give it to. Yeah. Space Jail was a lot of fun.
Headhunters, which was a foreign thriller based on a book by Joe Nesbo, who was a popular Scandinavian thriller writer. Killer Joe. Dread, which I actually enjoyed quite a bit.
Is that different from Dread 3D?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at home, it's... it would be just Dread. And Premium Rush.
I enjoyed that a lot, too.
The silly bicycle movie.
That's one that, depending on who you talk to in our office, was either a really good movie or a really bad movie. But I have to admit, I liked that a lot. I thought that was really fun. And frankly, I would have nominated Michael Shannon, I think, for Best Supporting Actor for his role as the evil but kind of stupid...
Yeah, I didn't actually make it to see it, but I've heard only good things about
this
crazy performance.
It's a lot of fun, and his performance manages to harness... He always seems crazy.
Yeah.
Always. And
except in Bug, where he is totally right. The government is trying to bug that guy.
They're just trying to annoy him. That's what it's about. The government's bugging me. Stop poking me, government. But like, or in Bug, or My Son, What Have You Done, or... Revolutionary Road, he comes off as super nuts all the time. And in Premium Rush, they manage to make him a little bit more of a grounded character who also is still crazy. And he pulls it off really nicely.
It's like all his crazy characters had sex with his character from that Boardwalk Empire, and they gave birth to a half-crazy, half-normal baby.
Yeah, exactly. Which was sent to an orphanage.
And then, wait, is his character from an orphanage, or?
No, no.
Okay.
Just saying, it wasn't raised by people, it was raised by spirits.
Okay.
In an abandoned monastery.
Oh, that's this is great, let me write this down.
Okay, what about you, Stuart? What were some of your favorites of the year?
Well, I mean, of course, The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. I don't think that's a big surprise.
Yeah, no.
Anytime Peter Jackson puts out a movie that isn't The Lovely Bones, it's probably going to go up there in my favorite movies. Cabin in the Woods, of course. Looper. Did you say Looper?
I didn't say Looper because I thought that it got enough attention, but I think I enjoyed that movie a lot.
But you like Looper because Looper's great.
I liked Looper a lot also.
I thought there were some pretty good big action movies like
Die and Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah, wait, what?
No, that was this year. You'll wait till next year's Floptacular for you to tell me how much you liked that.
Like The Dark Knight Rises, The Avengers, and Skyfall, I think were all good big budget action movies. But I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to throw in a movie that was a December 2011 release.
I think we're going to have to ask for your badge and gun.
Oh,
you're off the force.
And ask you why you've got a badge and gun.
That's the nicest police chief I've ever seen.
I think I'm going to have to ask you for your badge and gun, if that's okay.
Don't hate me. I'd say Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene really affected me, if anything, because John Hawks is fucking awesome.
He is awesome. He's Hawksome.
And for a small genre picture, Ty West's The Innkeepers was great.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed that a lot. I actually have to admit I enjoyed it more when it wasn't being scary.
Yeah, well,
I loved if that had been a movie about two people working in a hotel who try to find a ghost and don't, I think it might have been my favorite movie of the year after Moonrise Kingdom. But instead it went for scares.
But I mean, when it comes to scares, he's great at it.
He's great. But there was just something, the scenes between them, it was like watching a really great sitcom pilot in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like the characters felt very real and interacted in a way I liked, and it was very funny. And it was weird to just see Lena Dunham show up for one scene.
There's something about that movie, too, that it was beautifully shot in a way that kind of reminds me of movies that I grew up with as a kid, and I can't kind of put my finger on what it did, like the technique, like the way the camera moved reminded me of kind of that early Spielberg era.
Well, that's not so, Ty West stuff. Does so much stuff that is of an earlier era in his style.
And because it was shot in like an old bed and breakfast, it totally reminded me of, yes, Puppet Master. Awesome, Puppet Master. Full Moon Pictures, Puppet Master.
In case you were thinking it was The Puppet Masters, which is not the movie he's talking about, based on the Robert Heinlein novel.
Elliot.
I mean, my picks are pretty standard. I was trying to think. I didn't see a lot. Usually I don't see independent and foreign films until a year or two later when they're on video. And I was trying to keep myself to just stuff I saw.
Why don't you just go down to Canal Street and buy them from some guy off of a blanket?
I don't buy anything off a blanket. Just a principle I have.
Sure.
I'll eat things off a blanket. I'll go to picnics. Okay. Come on. I'm not going to buy something off a blanket. What am I, an animal? That's what animals do. Anyway, but my favorite movie overall, I think, was Moonrise Kingdom. But I liked Innkeepers a lot. My favorite big movie was The Avengers. And there was something inside of me as a longtime Marvel zombie who really enjoyed how successful that movie, like, took pride in how successful it was in a weird way, even though...
Like, you feel justified in liking Marvel Comics.
Exactly.
All these
now I find... Now, it must be the way you feel about Game of Thrones and George R. R. Martin now that show's a big hit.
Kind of, except I don't watch the show anymore because I'm too much of a nerd that likes the books.
But, I mean, the only thing that makes it bittersweet is that none of the people who create any of those characters got a dime, which was terrible. But, hey, what are you going to do? The movie was still good, right? I thought Skyfall up to the point when they leave the supervillain island was fantastic and one of the better Bond movies I've seen in a long time or in total. And I liked a lot of the ones you guys mentioned, Looper, Cabin in the Woods. I liked Silver Linings Playbook a lot. It managed to be a, in some ways, corny by the numbers Hollywood romantic movie, but in a way that hid that enough that I really enjoyed it.
And it starred Flophouse fave Bradley Cooper.
It starred Bradlin Coopsy.
Who is literally limitless.
And you got, and not only was Jennifer Lawrence giving a great performance in it, but she got to see her butt in very tight pants.
Yeah.
Not gross. That's not gross at all.
That's called value added.
Value, exactly. I liked Beasts of the Southern Wild a lot. And for sure, for, in terms of sheer spectacle, I really enjoyed Prometheus. If you don't try to figure out the character motivations, because they don't exist, and you don't convince yourself there's something more going on in the movie than what you're seeing, I really enjoyed it a lot.
But
and
what if we met our creator and he hated us, Elliot?
I almost will have to assume he would. There's no way I see the creator of humanity meeting us and being like, yes, you did, you got it perfect, you nailed it. That's exactly what I intended you to be like. I think it would happen almost like that way. And look,
toddlers and tiaras, that's what I wanted.
I think there's maybe at Premium Russia. Like, I think there's no scene, though, of the year that I got as much sheer visceral joy out of as her using that robot to pull a baby squid out of her belly.
Yeah.
That was like, and then it just stapling her shut. Like, so that is the kind of scene that I couldn't see working in any other medium. And it was so crazy and so wholeheartedly sold, you know. Yeah.
I remember being cornered at my birthday party this last year by a very drunk friend who was complaining about that scene because he's like, oh, and then she just, you know, she got up and she was running around for the rest of the movie. Like you can't do that with like a major abdominal surgery. And I'm like, you don't understand.
This is a movie.
Like, if you were worried about that logic, we wouldn't get the scene where a robot pulled an alien out of her.
Full, yeah.
What's with all the magic?
Yeah.
You wouldn't look.
What's with space travel across galaxies?
If you just saw,
why does that guy look like Peter O'Toole?
If you just saw a robot give an emergency C-section to an astronaut, uh-huh, and pull a squid baby out and staple her shut, and you're in a space pod, and she's running from an alien, and you're like, she'd never be able to run like that with those staples in, then you should not be watching that movie. I'm going to have to ask for your badge and your gun and that movie.
But I feel that level of like that suspension of disbelief seems to, for some reason, I feel like The Avengers gets a pass, whereas a movie like Prometheus doesn't, when like The Avengers is filled with crazy, ridiculous comic book logic, but people are like, oh, okay, whatever. Yeah, he's Thor. Bullshit, whatever.
I think because a lot of people seem to convince themselves for some reason that Prometheus was not like a crazy popcorn movie, which is what it is. They thought that this was going to be like some kind of meditation on humanity, and then you apply some kind of logic or meaning to it. But it's like this crazy popcorn movie. It's like, and you know,
filled with like images of heavy metal album covers.
Exactly. And for that, and on that level, I adored it. So there you go.
So we've kind of given our recommendations there, I would say. So I would say let's skip the recommendation segment.
I'd say that too.
And make our last segment of the evening letters.
Letters! Yay! Letters are brought to you by you. I mean, not
the
hand.
Letter U?
I'm not hand brought to you. Brought to you by the letter U and the letter.
So
these letters are brought to you by the invention of writing. Thanks, ancient Babylon.
So this missive is from Andy, last name withheld.
Thanks, hey, Andy, for writing in. Wait, I should have waited till I heard what he said.
Elliot sucks.
Oh, why did I thank him?
He says, your podcast always makes my day. I've listened to your back catalog at least 3 times, and at this point, I think I owe you some form of repayment. But since I'm not gainfully employed at the moment, allow me to pay you in internet money, a.k.a. memes.
Okay. I mean, you're listening to us as payment enough.
As you may know, The Walking Dead recently featured a zombie child named Penny. I'm avoiding spoilers here, I promise. I don't care.
I mean, I don't watch that show.
Not watching it. She's both adorable and terrifying because, well, she's a zombie child. So I ask you, what if Zombie Penny met a dinosaur? Who would eat whom? What if the dinosaur was also a zombie?
That's what I was going
to
ask.
The possibilities are endless, and I look forward to hearing your theories.
The possibilities are not endless. There are 4 endless possibilities.
Actually, you were incorrect.
So, tied in with the best of episode, I do want to say best zombie baby still goes to the zombie baby in Dead Alive / Brain Dead. And best zombie dinosaurs go to Scud the Disposable Assassin, the comic book.
Oh, yeah, those are some great zombie dinosaurs in that.
Now, here, I mean, here's the question. If Zombie Penny bit a dinosaur, does the zombie disease carry over to a dinosaur?
I have to assume it's an interspecies disease.
Yeah?
Yeah. If a monkey if a monkey scratch can give it to you, as in dead alive,
sure.
Then, I mean, that was a special kind of monkey.
But these are... These are extinct animals.
Just some stupid old monkey.
It wasn't just some old bonobo they found in the bottom of a laundry hamper or something.
Being extinct animals, maybe they have a different resistance to this zombie disease.
Or I would say it's more likely that they are more susceptible to it. When you are when you have had no exposure to a disease, it's usually worse for you.
The dinosaurs were killed by zombies?
If no, because they'd still be walking around.
They were killed by babies.
An army of babies sent back to the past to save our world.
What I'm more interested in is, does this zombie baby have really strong teeth, or does the dinosaur have really weak skin?
Yeah.
Because babies could bite my hand all the time, and they're not going to fuck it up. Like, yeah. I won't bleed at all.
And dinosaurs have super thick skin.
And their skin, I would assume, is thicker than mine.
Yeah, you can insult them all day. It doesn't even faze them.
Also, like, I feel like the dinosaur would have to sort of like walk by the baby, like within.
Is it a baby or is it a toddler?
Oh,
two very different things. Because a toddler can just chase a dinosaur.
Yeah, I think the answer to this is need more facts.
I think this is a little mover.
This is what would happen. The dinosaur begins swallowing the child.
Okay.
The child, not dead because it's a zombie, bites the softer flesh on the inside of the dinosaur's throat.
Still probably pretty tough.
I don't think it's gonna be that tough. It's still like, you know, mucous membrane and things like that, right? I don't know what goes on inside a person or an animal, but you got to believe there's softer parts in there.
All right.
And then the dinosaur gets zombified, but the kid is still inside the dinosaur's belly, eating its way out from the inside, but can't get through the skin. So it just kind of ricochets around forever inside this immortal zombie dinosaur.
So it doesn't have like a Porky Pig, that's all, folks, where it bursts out of the dinosaur's
Maybe it comes
belly.
Out of the dinosaur's pooper.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm into that.
This one is titled Peaches the Musical from Andrea L.N. Withheld.
Is that a musical based on the works of the artist Peaches?
Well, yeah. Here we go. Yeah, hey, guys. I really like you and you make me laugh, especially when you talk about crazy, implausible, off-the-wall ideas like Peaches starring in a musical. But wait, that really happened. She did a one-woman production of Jesus Christ Superstar, which Elliot mentions is a sing-along favorite.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite musicals.
As far as I know, she only did it a few times in Berlin, but I was delighted to watch it, and it was by far one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. It included her playing Jesus, and at the end, being crucified on a cross made of papier-mâché phalluses. I'm not sure you can see the full thing anywhere, but here's a clip. Also, I'll throw the clip up. On the
website. Is there anything we need to know before you set up this clip?
No.
Peaches, can you hear me?
We can't. It's not a video podcast.
Oh, sorry.
I'll put the clip on the website.
Wait, was this letter written by Peaches? Is that what you said?
No, but she's here to promote it.
Oh, okay.
Also, I just want to say, the letter. I'm an American living in New Zealand, and I need to keep listening to you
it's
every day.
It's pronounced New Zealand.
And I need to keep listening to you every day so I don't slip into this horrible accent. Now that's, come on.
It's a lovely, silly accent.
It's a wonderful accent.
And it's way better than a South African accent. Come on, you heard those people talk?
Take that, like, Invictus. Take that, District 9. But seriously, New Zealand accent, amazing.
I like it, yeah.
Lobo Marunga.
I mean, that's not the most accurate New Zealand accent.
This next email is titled No Subject.
What? Oh, it's a mystery box.
It's from That Which We Dare Not Speak Its Name.
Oh, okay.
And he says,
Nyarlathotep, the Crawling Chaos. I'll say it.
David Kalin.
Oh, no.
No.
It better not be.
Okay. He says, Dear Flopazoids, to echo a question from the site comments, I would also like to know what's going on with Elliot and Hallie. Is she merely his work wife, or is she Elliot's manic pixie dream girl? Sorry to ignore your art and concentrate on the personal lives of the artists, but everyone else at work has a reality show they follow religiously, and I do not. While I need to fit in with others, I still have the hipster need for upmanship. I think he means one-upmanship. I'm far.
But is that like when you get an extra life in Mario?
I'm far too cool to lower myself to the level of the Kardashians or the Real Housewives. I need a reality show full of ironic cultural references.
Uh-huh.
What better subject matter for such a show than the real scripted lives of those that make up randacious cultural references about movies? At season end,
that's
you're going to have
a word. Maybe that's like, a New Zealand word.
All hour.
At season end. At season end, you could have a wrap-up podcast about the making of the podcast.
Maybe no, we would do just like they do on Bravo. We'd have a show right after each episode that talks about that previous episode.
But to get to the meat of this question, I saw a comment on the Rock of Ages podcast online that this gentleman is referring to.
I did not see that comment.
Intimating some sort of romance between you and Hallie.
Whoa, what?
And calling me a third wheel on that episode, which I found odd because we spent a lot of that Rock of Ages episode talking about how Hallie and I were singing along to the songs together and you refused to sing.
Hey, well, look, I don't know. I can't explain the mind of the comment writer, but I would say Hallie and I are just good friends. She is just my office mate, and if anything, we have more of a brother-sister relationship.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. As someone who works down the hall from you, you guys are more like twins than you and your twin are, I feel like.
Yeah, like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito. She lifts up the backs of cars, and I'm like, hey, Mom had twins? Oh, way to go.
Yeah, you are a goofy brother and sister for sure.
I would say anyone who walks into our office and sees that the door is closed to our office, no, we're not doing it. We're just bad-mouthing the people
what?
We work with. but there's no romance there. The only romance is between me and my lovely wife.
So this last letter of the show...
Of the Floptacular Flop Awards.
Is...
Letters section.
Is from...
Rated R.
David Elliott's brother, last name
withheld. Oh, God in heaven!
dear Flopazoids, what the...
Wait, is Flopazoids suddenly what we are now? Flopazoids sounds like a really crappy 80s Ninja Turtles ripoff. Like, we're the four Flopazoids. We came from the future. And really floppy, I guess. Look, I don't know.
That would be a crappy show.
Got canceled 2 minutes into the first episode.
He writes, I was listening to your most recent Nick Cage Mid-sentence. Extravaganza, which was totally recorded after the Bratz Live event, and had a few grievances I had to air.
General grievances.
Why does he have a heart inside a robot
Why
chest?
Is he still coughing when he's a robot?
Had a few grievances I had to air.
He doesn't have an esophagus.
While Elliot and Stuart moan irritatedly in the background.
Oh.
First of all, I want to make it clear to everyone that while I do appreciate... I want to make it clear to everyone that while I do appreciate the support from writers clamoring for my freedom, I have not been locked in a cell, forced to wear an iron mask, or kept from watching football by my brother or other Flophouse hosts. Though considering how the Giants have played the past 2 months, obviously this is an old winner, perhaps the last one.
Yeah, the Super Bowl was like 100 years ago.
Would not be so awful. Why Elliot would spread such lies is beyond me, but I hope the listening public hasn't become too concerned about my well-being. I can almost guarantee that they have not. Next, I believe my brother...
Even the letter reader is taking pot shots.
Next, I believe my brother referred to the Althing as a traditional Viking meeting place. While the original Althing in Iceland was established by Viking descendants sometime around 930 AD, I believe Iceland's National Assembly, which has met continuously since then, is the only gathering or legislative body to have actually taken the name Althing, which I learned when I went to
see... He went to Iceland.
The Althing's original meeting place in Þingvellir National Park in Iceland this past summer.
They only had one word at the time, Thing, so everything was Thing back then.
I suppose I could be wrong about this, and if I am, I have no doubt Elliot will waste little time telling me so.
No.
Lastly, I was shocked and appalled to hear Elliot's offense and anger over the thoughtless gift he received from a, quote, close relative. Was the National Treasure Criterion Collection DVD block set I gave him for his 30th birthday
It's a block set.
It's a set of blocks.
Your irritant and or brother, David.
The present I got was not from him. I will not reveal the identity or the gift, as it might reveal the identity or the occasion. But needless to say, David, thanks for writing in. Please never do again. I'm actually going to see him this Friday, and I will have to needle him about this.
So, guys.
I guess he didn't like when at the live screening we called him out and let the audience gaze upon his magnificence.
Yeah, well, you know. I feel like that would be the source of his strength.
What, people's attention?
Yeah, like Superman gaining power from the Earth's yellow sun.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he gained power from the shadows that he slinks around in.
Who,
like some kind of rat man.
Is this my brother you're talking about?
Yeah.
like some kind of rat man.
Like some kind of sewer-dwelling chud figure.
Like some kind of sports-loving chud. Just a chud with a football helmet on, biting people's legs off.
It'd totally be a good idea if
like
you're a
chud
to wear a football helmet.
Like Chud 2, Bud the Chud.
That was the High Times Chud crossover.
Well, another floptacular.
And
has...
of course, Chud 3, National Lampoon's Club Chud Vacation. Starring
is
Corys.
Is it a club run by Chuds, or is it a club that is Chud?
The only people who ever watched it have gone insane.
And then there's...
so nobody knows.
And there's...
But the poster is a Chud's head between a bunch of boobs.
There's C-Hud, starring Paul Newman. But that's another floptacular come and gone. We need to sign off for the Flophouse. I've been Dan McCoy.
I'm still Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Keep reaching for the stars, but only with their permission. Good night.
That was a good warm-up, guys. Let's start the real one, right? Fucking just go with it, dude.
Just Go With It, starring Adam Sandler, Brooklyn Decker, Cameron... wasn't in that.
Jennifer Aniston. Jennifer and
Nicole Mankid.
Jennifer Mjauniston, yeah.
And Dave Matthews, right? From the Dave Matthews
Was he?
Band.
No, his name is Dave Matthews Band.
David Matthews.
Dave M. Band.